Testosterone too is being shown to be decreasing at a rapid rate, and estrogen in men is increasing, and we have testosterone dominance in women, and we have all of these hormone imbalances that weren't a thing 40 years ago.
Hey there, welcome to the Biohacker Babes podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Renee, a certified nutritional consultant with a master's degree in nutrition.
What's up? And I'm Lauren, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and Czech movement specialist. We're sisters and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
Our mission is to provide actionable steps so you can optimize your health, strengthen your intuition, and support your body's natural healing abilities. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 243 of the Biohacker Babes. My name is Lauren, tuning in today from Memphis, Tennessee. Have I already done a recording here in Memphis?
I think maybe one.
One other in Memphis? Okay, we're still in Memphis, joined by my sister and co-host, the beautiful Renee Bells, in Las Vegas.
Hello, what's hello. Viva Las Vegas. What's happening?
Viva Las Vegas. I went to Graceland on Monday, so Elvis is on the brain.
So and cool. I want to go there one day.
It is very cool. It's very cool. And I've been twice and I will go a few more times. There's just endless information to digest. What a fascinating life and what a full life. It's so crazy going to Graceland. You're like, this man had 1 million hobbies. Like not only did he change music forever, but he had a gazillion activities that he knew everything about. I don't know how he had time for it. Well, I don't think he slept. So I have less hobbies because I really prioritize my sleep, I suppose. But I don't know. Yeah. I was like really inspired to get some more hobbies because of Elvis. So anyways, here we are.
All right. And
we're going to talk about leveraging technology today, the power of data and wearables. And if that is scary to you, we want to make sure that you feel empowered and not overwhelmed by this because data can be a lot, but it's just so interesting to reveal some blind spots. And once you see something, it's really hard to unsee. And I think there's a lot against us in our modern day world. And our guest has done an amazing job at really being her own health advocate. And now she's doing so much work to help others do the same. We originally connected around blood sugar and mental health, but she has continued her biohacking journey into optimizing fertility. And now she is creating her own company that is testing for household products and creating household products that don't have plastics in them. Because if you haven't been turned on to this, plastics are the new smoking, are they?
I think
plastics
so.
Are killing us. Plastics are everywhere. They're in our yoga clothing. They're in our water bottles. They're in our cutting boards. They're in our dish detergent. What is it? The dishwasher pods?
Yeah, the dishwasher pods.
It's dump everywhere. Those. And so again, looping back, we don't want you to be scared, but I think this is stuff we really need to be aware of. And with awareness becomes better responsibility as consumers. And then optimize health. So we're really trying to educate and empower you. And our guest, Erin Knight, does a fabulous job. And she's just lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yeah, Erin is a wealth of knowledge. Oh, man, she knows so much in this space. And we were joking that I have like all these web browsers up now. I got to like do some deeper dives into things that she talked about. But I think with the environmental toxins, I think it's so important to remember, like, don't let it stress you out. Just educate yourself and then take baby steps. So like for me, I cleaned up all my personal care products. It's been like 15 years. And I say this in the episode, I did this clockwise test and I was shocked that my blood picked up on, it was like higher in phthalates, higher in parabens. And I'm like, what the heck? I've like cleaned up everything. But now I'm realizing there's like a whole nother level of things I need to look at. And I'm taking it as like, it's empowering. Like, oh, there is more I can do to optimize my health. And like the dishwasher pods, I just learned that a week ago that those got to go. But you know what? I didn't just throw the bag in the trash. I'm finishing the bag I have. And then when I go to buy more, I'm going to buy something that doesn't have plastic in it. So I think that's a really good rule of thumb is like, if you realize you're using something that's not good, just finish it up and then make a better choice at the next purchase. Don't feel like you got to go dump your whole house in the trash. So anyways,
oh my gosh, that would be quite expensive. Yeah. Let's go baby steps. Step by step. I love that. We really hope you enjoy this conversation. So a little bit more about Erin Knight. She is a biohacker, a mother, an entrepreneur who has built companies into multi-million dollar brands. Today, she is sharing what converted her to biohacking and how she leveraged technology to support her mental health journey in a way most others might not be aware of. She will also share her journey to getting pregnant in her 30s and research on the topic of fertility for both men and women. Don't worry, men, we will not leave you out today. Some shocking statistics about sperm count by 2050. Stay tuned for that one. And in the show notes, we have lots of resources. As Renee mentioned, we have a lot of homework and browsers open right now, but her new brand called Earth and Aesthetic is launching in June. We will stay keep you abreast of that launch. We're super, super excited. If you are now concerned about your wooden cutting board being covered in plastic, she has designed a brand that is not only beautiful, but is healthy for your body and the planet.
All right, let's dive in.
What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I gotta tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate. So don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
Welcome, Erin, to the Biohacker Babes podcast. Thanks for joining us today in your lovely podcast studio, not at home. We're happy you're not at home.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm also happy I'm not at home with what's going on there. I have some mold exposure at home, but thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, lovely to chat. We've been trying to get you on for a little bit, and today is the day. So you have made like a pretty amazing stamp on the biohacking technology world. You're really helping a lot of companies soar. We're huge believers of data and using wearables to reveal blind spots for our own health journeys. And you've had a lot of eye-opening moments, discovering like some powerful opportunities for healing for yourself to optimize your mental health. And now you're going through a fertility journey. So we're really excited to go through all of your experience and wisdom. But I'm the most excited about blood sugar and mental health. So I want to start there. The beginning of your biohacking journey, you were on an anxiety medication, and then you discovered that you had some blood sugar dysregulation. How did you discover this connection? Like, what was the way in for you?
Yeah, for me, it came as a complete shock. You know, my history is I was raised healthy, doing gymnastics, dance, eating healthy. And, you know, it wasn't until later in life when I started learning about wearables and put on a CGM for the first time that I really was like, wait, hold on. I had been on anxiety medication for a while. And before that, ADHD medication since I was in middle school. And I always thought like, oh, I'm got this neurodegenerative stuff going on and I'll probably have to be medicated my whole life. But it wasn't until I wore a CGM that I actually saw, wait, when I'm in the red and my blood sugar is really low is when I'm having panic attacks, I'm sweating, heart palpitations, and racing thoughts, and all of this panic and anxiety. So if that correlates and I balance that out, could I get off of meds? And that's really where this all started for me. It was a 10-month journey. It wasn't an easy process of figuring sort of my body out and unique things that spiked me. But I would say that was my start. And for me, that correlation, once I saw it repeat, there was no unseeing it. And I tried going to my doctor and saying like, hey, I know it's like a typical cliche thing. I'm noticing every time my blood sugar is really low, I'm feeling this way. Can I get a CGM? You know, no, CGMs are really only for people who have uncontrollable glucose that are diabetic and on insulin. You don't have that, so you're fine. So I just kept buying it out of pocket. And over this 10-month journey, really what helped me was to be able to see which things were spiking me because those were usually the things that had a correlative crash. It wouldn't go down without it going up first. And I'd eat something that I thought was healthy, like a Belvita bar, high-fiber breakfast bar, which is really just a naked carb that's been marketed as something else. But I would spike really high, crash really low, feel really terrible, and start the whole process over again. Once I started identifying which foods were spiking me and crashing me, I started to, through ketogenic lifestyle really for a while, balance that out and got off of medication within about 10 months.
Wow. And was your physician supportive of that, of tapering off the medication at that point?
I don't even think they asked me about it. I just stopped picking it up. It would be cool if they were monitoring that, but they really weren't. I just stopped picking it up. So yeah.
And then it was really an advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
And it became game changing for my family. I called myself the CGM fairy after that. I started slapping them on my mom, my stepdad, my husband, and saw my husband was pre-diabetic. My stepdad was type 2 diabetic with a fasting blood sugar in the 200s. And then I started to be like, so many people are having blood sugar issues around me that would never have known if they weren't able to check. And there's no diagnostics kind of going into, I mean, other than the glucose tolerance test, which really is just showing how quickly it comes down, not really how your baseline is or general, you know, metabolic health overall is going. So that was really sort of like drinking the Kool-Aid in the biohacking scene for me. That kind of rocked my world. And trickled into my family, too, because I changed my kids' diets. I changed the way that our whole family was eating. And like I said, my husband started testing. Then he kind of got into the keto thing, got his blood sugar down. And that was really it for us. Once we felt better and started to see the results with the way our kids were behaving, and people were asking us, like, what parenting book are you doing? Your kids, like, never fight. It's like, oh, no, it's their diet. You know, that's a whole nother thing, too, that we don't really think about is how much that impacts their mood if it's impacting ours. So,
Yeah, all like the ADD and ADHD and hyperactivity and stuff in kids. Yeah, that could be huge. And it sounds like CGM is almost like the gateway drug into like optimizing your health. Because it's like once you start seeing that, you want to just optimize everything around it. And I'm like thinking back to when I was in high school, I used to have panic attacks all the time. Actually, like ended up in the ER once or twice from the panic attack. And man, do I wish I could go back and like see what my blood sugar was doing. And this was like 25 years ago. So CGMs definitely weren't a thing back then. But I would guess I probably had some like reactive hypoglycemia at the time. So really cool that you got to see that data. So I'm curious for anyone that maybe is struggling today with anxiety, would you just say go ahead and put a CGM on, or is there something that they should consider before jumping to that?
Absolutely. I think so. And I know Dr. Chris Palmer is talking a lot about the correlative data between mental health concerns with depressive disorders, as well as anxiety and even BPD and things like that, and metabolic wellness, and how know, those are so correlated. And I think that first you kind of got to go through it, a checklist is like, what is going into my body that might be impacting? Because like you just said, essentially, it could be not a mental health issue. It could be a metabolic issue that's leading to mental health symptoms. And so wearing that and seeing and just kind of ruling it out is a helpful start, especially if, you know, it's something you've noticed you've been struggling with, or you feel really tired after meals. That's another, you know, red flag to look for is like, how far after my meal do I start to feel off? And it's usually a couple hours. So in your mind, you don't think it's correlated. It's not right after. It takes a while for your body to break down the carbohydrates, lift the glucose, and then crash it back down. That's like a, generally speaking, a 2-hour time frame where that you know, glucose curve would happen. So if you notice you're really tired after meals, or you're craving food even just like 2 hours after eating, those are some red flags that I would say perhaps you should put on a CGM and see if there's what is called the glucose roller coaster that's driving these feelings.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more, because I find a lot of people don't feel these things. So you really need the visual data to reveal that blind spot. And I think we know what it feels like to have low blood sugar, but most people don't know what it feels like to have high blood sugar until you see it. Why would you correlate the two? And it really is. I agree again about the mental health connection. If we are creating inflammation and we are creating insulin resistance, and there's an impact on leaky gut and the microbiome, like, of course we're in a mental health epidemic. Of course we're setting the stage for that. So I agree. It's like the most non-invasive, other than there's a tiny little filament that goes in your arm. It's like pretty non-invasive, and we can start to fix behaviors right away.
Yeah. Especially compared to like finger pricking. I did that for a while too. Only so much space. I really
poor fingers
all the time.
All the band-aids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I forget it's there. You know, I will like take off something really quickly, or, you know, a backpack strap or something, and shoot the thing across the room, because it feels like a sticker. You really do forget that it's on once you get kind of used to it. So definitely I would say it's a more passive and easy way to keep track of all of that without continuous pain.
So once someone has a CGM, because I think we all agree that that's what people should do, maybe you can share some biohacks around optimizing, because obviously it's very personal, right? You're going to start to learn which foods that maybe you should completely avoid, but maybe there are certain foods that we want to keep in. Like, what biohacks have you found to be helpful to offset this roller coaster ride?
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. Something to consider whenever you're, I think, tracking your own personal health data is bioindividuality. You're going to not be the same as the next person, which is why cookie cutter meal plans and things like that tend to not work, generally speaking. And what I found for me is I spike on totally different things than other people do, like my husband. There actually was a study done by Zoe in partnership with Cleveland Health. And they looked at 3,000 identical twins who are copy-paste genetically, right? And they found that even these identical twins spike on different things. And they correlated that to differences in microbiome and lifestyle. So if genetic copies of each other need different foods and spike on different things, what does that say for the rest of us? So I agree completely. You need to look at yourself individually and see what spikes you. I like to do kind of the process of elimination. Have repeat days where you're eating the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner a couple days in a row. And then you can kind of see, like, is breakfast spiking me? Or is it when I had my coffee? Or did I have a stressful conversation? Because those things also impact your blood sugar. Eating at your desk in front of your laptop while you're working, that can also be a compounding stressor that can increase your blood sugar. Whereas if you had that exact same meal in a de-stressed and deep breathing state and like a rest state, then you will see less of an increase, because the cortisol, the stress hormone, can also impact and raise blood sugar in tandem with the food. So there's lots of different things you can look at. The first thing would be eliminating stuff. I actually had what I thought was like a low-ish carb protein powder that I was having every morning in my smoothie. And it was spiking me. And I didn't know it at first. I thought, okay, maybe it's the blueberries I'm putting in here. Maybe it's the milk. I'll switch to almond. And then it was still spiking me. So finally, I switched the protein powder out. And it was the protein powder, even though the nutrition panel didn't show it. For whatever reason, that protein powder was spiking me. So trust your body more than you trust the nutrition panel. I mean, there's other foods I found out there on my glucose journey, like Smart Sweets or others. And I don't really want to badmouth the brand, but that spiked me as high as like trolley gummy bears. So it may say X net carb, but your body may respond as if it's just a straight carb. So don't just trust the nutrition panel, trust your body first, and then swap mm-hmm. little things out to see what changes. And when you eat, de-stress. And if you are going to have something that's maybe higher carb, you can play with exercise timing. I find if I do like a bit of sprints, you know, even just a half mile sprints, and then I have like a banana with some peanut butter, doesn't spike me at all compared to if I had banana with peanut butter, you know, just sitting down and without having a timed workout with it. So there's lots of tips there that you can try.
Yeah. Or just having more muscle mass in general is like such a great strategy. Let's lift some weights because your muscle is going to take care of a lot of that. Yeah. Thank you for those tips. So beyond maybe your blood sugar data, anything else behavioral to help with anxiety? Because it is just so pervasive these days. It's like kids are having panic attacks. I know, Renee, you said you had them when you were young, but it's so common now for young adults to be having panic attacks and anxiety.
Absolutely. I think. Yeah, I mean, obviously nutrition. Another is sleep. And I think all of us in our early 20s probably like, yeah, I had so much anxiety, so much, you know, maybe depression or just more moodiness, but we're probably out late. We're probably adding alcohol to the mix. We're probably over caffeinating. We're probably not eating a balanced diet. And that's a recipe for some, you know, chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I find other aspects of looking into manage stress and anxiety would probably be sleep timing. I know that's kind of a big thing talked about, but breath work too. And even still, I think breath work is a major thing to recognize. Also, when you notice tension in the body, like do a body scan of like when you start to have those tension moments. This is something you do with your kids too, is when you notice their hands clench or their face change, you say, where are you feeling some pressure in your body? And calling that out to the brain kind of flags it so that you can address it. And part of at least cognitive behavioral therapy is to like thank your body for that reaction because it's trying to protect you. And when you thank it, it's like your body lets go of it. Cause like, okay, they're aware, they've acknowledged, and now we're good. And then you can breathe through it and kind of get out of that state. But I think for me, it was definitely, I mean, it doesn't mean I'm free of any stress or anxiety these days, that I kind of balanced my glucose and got off of meds. But I do find all of those physiological things that I couldn't really stop from happening by doing breath work and all these other things like heart racing, shaking, brain fog, snapping, because I couldn't really focus. Those were gone. And then it was just the stressor and being able to get back in tune with my body to get through those moments as opposed to, being stuck sort of in those physical feelings that keep you in that state.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned sleep. I think sleep is huge for this. But at the same time, I find a lot of people with anxiety can't sleep. They're like, they lay in bed and they're just like, I'm sleeping 2-3 hours. So breath work is obviously a really good one for that. I don't know. Did you ever have trouble sleeping with your anxiety?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And glucose lows while sleeping. So meal timing, this is a good point actually, because if I was eating too late in the evening, then my blood sugar would be rising just before bed and then crash around 2-3 a.m. I would wake up thinking I had a nightmare. And I was like, oh, I've always had sleep issues. I've always kind of sleptwalked and had all of these like waking and talking in my sleep and just kind of dysregulated sleep as a result also of glucose issues. And then once I wore the CGM, it would start beeping in the night and I'd like wake up and I'd be like, oh, okay. So this is actually another correlative thing. When I eat late, for me, my blood sugar does its thing and then kind of dips in the night. And then I wake up with a racing heart. I started turning off the alerts because I don't want to wake up to the phone beeping and, you know, fixing that as possible. So that's one. And then also sleep hygiene. I've added frequency music and sort of like a hygiene routine, like 5 minutes before bed. It's not a huge 30-minute light candle sort of thing. It's really just like, all right, I'm ready for bed. I put on, you know, we have red lights throughout the house. So our house looks like a murder mansion all the time. Nice. Kids with the red lights, you know. But
love it.
I put on solfeggio frequency. I listen to that for a little bit, do a couple deep breaths, I wear earplugs at night. And then my body is now learned like, oh, that's the signal. We're ready for bed. I think that is like a little tiny thing you can do to kind of prep your brain for its rest time, and then not eating close to bed. If you do, I mean, there are some nights where I'm traveling or something. I try to keep it just like protein and veggie. I find that that helps too.
Yeah, that's great. Good. Yeah, I have to add with the you said alcohol in there. I noticed with my CGM, well, I always knew I didn't sleep well when I drank alcohol. But then once I had the CGM, what I saw, even just like one glass of wine with dinner, my blood sugar would be steady through dinner. But then at like 2 or 3 a.m., I would get that drop on the CGM. I'd see that. And I would wake up, like you said, with like anxiety, kind of a racing heart, and then you can't fall back asleep. And I'm like, man, that alone is like not worth it to have that drink. But now you see it in the data and you're like, oh, no wonder my body was waking me up at 2 in the morning. It's trying to save me. It's terrible, though.
I think biohacking ruins alcohol. I am firm believer, like, if you become a biohacker, just know you're going to start really not liking alcohol anymore. Because once you see the data of, like, also the Aura Ring plus the blood sugar, you're just like, this is not worth it. And it takes a couple days to reset. And it's just, there's other things.
Yeah, you really start to resent it. It's like if you had conflict with a person in life and they wronged you, you're like, oh, you're going to avoid that person. That's a good way of putting it. The evil. Yeah. So what have you seen in Aura Ring? Let's continue this leveraging technology. What's been kind of revealing or eye-opening there?
Well, fun with alcohol, or not fun, depending on how you look at it, is that I find every time I drink that my HRV tanks, my deep sleep, which is usually almost 2 hours, which is kind of like, I guess, pretty great. It will go down to like 30 minutes. And I may sleep like a rock or feel like I slept like a rock, but the quality of sleep, my HRV, my resting heart rate, my even sometimes my temperature gets elevated because I'm processing that toxin. And as we know, like the liver is where our glycogen stores are, which is like our emergency fund of glucose, which is blood sugar. It can't utilize that emergency fund when we drink, because the liver is also responsible for detoxifying the body and processing that alcohol out of our system. So I personally feel that that's probably why we see that glucose low, because our liver is processing toxin. It can't then convert the glycogen stores into energy to keep our glucose stable anymore. And because it's processing toxin, our heart rate's elevated because it's in process mode. And then, you know, our temperature may go up, or, you know, all of the other things that are getting this toxin out of our body instead of resting and repairing, which is what we're supposed to be doing at night. So I do feel that if I do drink, it's probably with brunch on a Saturday. You know, it's
a day drink.
Yeah. But then at least I process it throughout the day and I can still get my good sleep at night. So
The body temperature, I totally see that too. And actually I use the Natural Cycles app to track my cycle, because it syncs with the Aura Ring. And it's cool because in the morning it'll say, this is the body temperature we pulled from Aura. Do you want to like confirm it or whatever? But if it's elevated, like out of your range, it'll say, are you sick or hungover? And you can select one of the two, and then it will pull that temperature out so it doesn't skew the data. But I'm like, and sometimes I'm like, well, I had one drink, so I guess I'm hungover. I'm not really hungover, but like I select that just so the data doesn't get skewed. So body temperature is huge. And you can feel that when you sleep really hot.
So hot. Yeah.
So hot.
And drinking is just, you like feel sweaty and just like, ah, this is not. Yeah.
Have we scared everyone?
I know, but it's like that 2 hour window when you first go to bed, when your body's really processing it, even if the heart rate does drop in later stages, I find my readiness score is so impacted by those crucial like first few hours when we should be in deep sleep. And yeah, so for me, it's so not worth it. Ugh.
Yeah, that's when my body sprints through that deep sleep. That's, you know, later in my later phases of sleep or later hours of sleep, I don't really get as much that during that period in that window. Yeah, I love Aura. I'm using Aura as well for, actually was using it last year a lot for cycle tracking and, you know, stress tracking, which is their new cool feature on there, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've also seen, now we're talking wearables and sort of the ability to kind of get into proactive health. With Heads Up Health, they're a group that allows doctors to do remote patient monitoring or utilize wearable device data, whether it's CGM or Aura or a smart blood pressure cuff or what have you, to use this in a proactive manner to detect certain things too, which I've not personally experienced, but I find mind-boggling that we're like at this phase of health intervention in with technology. And one thing they actually found was one of the practices that was doing remote monitoring with Aura was able to detect a cardiac event before it actually happened to a patient and call them in, have them go to the hospital. And they went straight into a heart surgery because they were having an actual cardiac event. But that was before they had any major issues where an ambulance had to get them. They walked into the practice and went into a surgery. And
do you
know
what they saw? Do you know what data they pulled?
I don't know. And I think that was like something they didn't. It was about the rhythm of the heart is what they were
saying.
That was the data. Now, about the actual diagnosis, they didn't share that particular piece of information, but it was serious enough of a cardiac event for them to go in and have surgery that day. But to me, it's like we're talking about it for health optimization purposes. But in some cases, some folks can be using this for like later stage, you know, proactive measures against a bigger issue, a much bigger issue. And I just feel like it's crazy that we're at this phase where we can do all of this and actually see inside of our bodies. When in the history of the world have we ever been able to not just like look at a nutrition panel, but actually be like, okay, the nutrition panel says this. What is actually happening inside of my body? And be able to see that and make decisions based on like what's behind the curtain.
Yeah. It's amazing.
What's the chemistry reaction that's going to happen? I mean, it's just going to get better and better, right? We're going to become robots with a little panel on our wrist and we could just measure our electrolytes and insulin at all times.
Like, can't wait for that.
It's a little scary, but I'm ready for it. Retroactively, we could go back and just be like, oh, at this time in my life when I was struggling with this, I wonder if I'd had more data points, if I could have put it together. It's great. We just have more puzzle pieces. We can really fill in the gaps here.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite metric on Aura? I'm just curious.
I think for me, my favorite, I guess my metrics that I like the best are my sleep stages, because I find that really correlates. Obviously your daily readiness, but for me, I'm kind of like I sleep shorter amount than most people. I average about 6.5 hours, but I feel really optimal at that, you know, 6.5 to 7 hours. So my daily readiness score is generally low because the length of time, but I find my deep sleep and my REM sleep is what tells me like, this is going to be a good day where you can do lots of activity, as well as your temperature. You were talking about, you know, ovulatory cycle management and measurement with the algorithm paired with your self-reported data through Aura and Natural Cycles. Love that. I also love that the first time I ever saw that come through and it was like, you're going to start your period in the next 2 days. I was like, what? It can tell me what? I was like, that's amazing. Like how much you're about to go on a trip or something. You're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to pack differently. Having that heads up is just so nice.
I just had that happen. Like I ovulated a little late last month, but it picked up ovulation and it, like clockwork, it said in 14 days from today, you will get your period. And I was going to be away on a business trip. So I packed what I needed. And sure enough, that day it came and I had my stuff. So I was like, thank you, Aura.
Dang, data. But was that through Natural Cycles or Aura alone?
I have the pair, but I use it mostly in the Aura app. I don't usually use the Natural Cycles UI.
Right, but it pulls through.
But they pull through. Yeah.
So I don't use Natural Cycles. I'm like, Renee, tell me everything. But I just use Aura and I find that the cycle tracking isn't super accurate. But I think what we can glean from it is the heart rate variability, the HRV, but also the heart rate fluctuations throughout the month and the body temperature. It's just so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they definitely have some room for improvement in regards to, especially when you add your dates in there of certain things, how it records. But that and I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, I was going to chime in about what you said about the sleep is I think it's good to point out that with Aura, less time in bed or less time asleep is going to impact your readiness score, even if you are recovered. Like, I think you feel good. You're waking up maybe without an alarm and you are recovered, but because it's only 6.5, 7 hours, Aura is going to hit you on that readiness score. And same thing with the other way. You could sleep 10 hours, not really be fully recovered, but Aura is going to give you a good readiness score because you slept so many hours. Yes. So I think that's one thing like to keep in mind for Aura users. It does get skewed a little bit there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I remember what I was going to say, and it is for being a woman using Aura and ACGM. The beauty of that to me is like, or any, you know, I also have used it in Neato. I've used other like hormone, like urine analysis tools that kind of give me my date ranges of like what my cycle length is, what phase I'm in, like the follicular or the luteal. I've also found my carb tolerance during different phases of my hormone cycle totally fluctuates. And during certain phases, I'm like, ooh, I could definitely have more carbs right now because I'm in this phase and it's not going to really impact my baseline or my total glucose changes. But, you know, at other phases, I have to dial that back and be more like fruit and veggie centric with my carbohydrates, less potatoes or things like that. So I don't know. Have you guys noticed the same thing measuring both glucose and utilizing like hormone tracking?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I was just going to give some context for the audience. If you're not familiar with the hormonal rise and fall, if we get the rise and fall of estrogen and the follicular phase, rise and fall of progesterone. I find with the CGMs, because we've become a little more insulin insensitive in the luteal phase, but we also don't want to restrict the carbs too much. Like we do want to feed the progesterone. So it's kind of like a balancing act where like maybe your glucose is a little higher. We don't want to avoid completely. But what I found is when the hormones are low, then I have to be really careful. Is that one you're finding? You have to pull back on things like potatoes?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And I also, it's fun because there are certain phases where I'm like, I can have a little more. I know there's more in my budget.
Yeah.
And husband will be like jealous because he'll have the same thing I had and he'll have his like rise. But
is that when estrogen is high, like estrogen and testosterone before ovulation?
Yes.
For me, that's my power time. I'm like, dang, do it all.
And then, you know, after ovulation, I have to dial it back and kind of. And but I also find that that's when I can work out harder and things like that too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just gives us powerful. So much permission as females.
Yeah. It's a superpower. We get to carb, you know, intensify our carb load during certain phases.
Yeah. How has this trickled into your fertility journey?
Yeah. Actually, that's a really, really great question. And kind of the history for me is, last year, I was working at a totally different role. My lifestyle was totally different. Some days I'd be gone 20 plus days of the month traveling for work. And I'm a mom of three and my husband works on site. So there's like definitely other stressors involved with that. But I started, I mean, we were trying to conceive for several months. It was about 6-7 months that we were trying to conceive. And my glucose was fine. I started looking at my hormones and also doing cortisol testing and found my cortisol was like really off the charts and it was impacting my hormones. And when you don't have enough progesterone at the right time, you can't have an egg implant. And I was having that issue where I'd have chemical pregnancies. I'd test positive for a day. I'd be excited. I'd test positive another the next day. And then I'd test negative. And, you know, that would be that. And I think for me, glucose obviously is important for that because, you know, when you have dysregulated glucose, it can lead to PCOS and fertility issues for that reason. But I had already healed my glucose journey with, you know, over the span of the past few years. For me, then it was like, all right, what other factors may play a part into this? And I haven't officially announced it, but I will hear I'm pregnant now.
Congratulations.
So, yes. Amazing. Congrats.
What helped, thank you. For me, what helped was actually first, for a while, I was like, okay, what is wrong with my body? I'm like, I know I'm in my like mid-30s and, you know, what the stats are out there, kind of scary. It's like, if you're in your mid-30s, you have a 15% chance of getting pregnant every month. And you think that's really small. And, you know, maybe it's my body or maybe I'm aging or maybe I'm not doing something right. And I think instead of getting into that mindset, I think it's important to start thinking, okay, what environmentally is going on? And for me, it was my blood sugar was fine. For the most part, my hormones were fine. my cortisol levels were really high. My stress levels were really high. And I knew I was stressed with my job. So that was the first thing, you know, was like, all right, I need to work on my stress, doing breath work and this and that, and kind of changing my environment. And then also I started researching into what other things have been impacting fertility. And then I saw this chart that was like really kind of heart dropping. So it was like showing from the 70s to now, the fertility decline. And it was correlating it with the introduction of plastics into our environment. And talking about PFAs or polyfluoral alkyls, and essentially that the introduction of these forever chemicals was impacting fertility, not just for women, but also for men. And that they're in houseware products like Tupperware, like drinking straws, clothing, underwear, grocery bags, like everything around us, carpet, fabric on your upholstery. And I started by throwing out the plastic. I dumped plastic. I got wood utensils and a wood cutting board. And I thought, okay, this is good. Switching to glass, this is good. And then I read, wait, your wood utensils could actually be coated in microplastics too, and polyfluoroalkyls too. So I was like, okay. I got together with a friend who she works for. She's actually a geologist, and she sends things in for, she sends a bunch of soil and groundwater in for testing at these EPA labs. And I asked her, do you think an EPA lab would take some of my housewares and test them for these forever chemicals? She's like, yeah, I don't see why not. And sure enough, wood cutting boards, wood utensils contained these forever chemicals that the EPA is knowing are a hazard to human health and to fertility. And I thought, what in the heck is going on?
No. So yeah. Sad.
Oh, man. I want to get into more like hidden things, but I just read last week about the dishwasher tabs, the like the plastic ones, that's then shooting plastic all over your dishes and your dishwasher, and then you're eating off of them and you're consuming plastic in that way.
Yes. Oh, also dryer sheets. Dryer sheets too.
I got rid of dryer sheets. Yeah, I got rid of dryer sheets. I got rid of the bad laundry detergent, but the dishwasher tabs was the next one for me. I'm like, oh, they're like, you know, fragrance free organic dishwasher tabs, but they're in that little plastic coating. And now I like run the dishwasher and I just picture this plastic shooting out all over my dishes. So I got to get rid of those.
Oh,
next.
Gosh. The more you know, it just comes back to haunt you. It's terrible.
It ruins stuff, doesn't it? A little bit. And then same thing with like the Stanley mug. I was like, what about Stanley mug? Okay.
People love those.
I love those. It's super stuff cold. Yeah. They're stainless steel. And they just had like, I don't know, there's a lawsuit going because there's lead in the seal at the bottom. But even the coating on the outside. Now, that's not the part you're drinking out of. That's the seal between the, you know, it's unless you destroy the thing, you're probably not going to get exposed to that. But the coating on the outside, I'm like, what is this colorful coating that makes it so, you know, beautiful and this beautiful aesthetic? It's a powdered PFA thermoplastic. So it's like, oh, so the inside is just the contact. Yeah. And the wearing that down. And then also you've got plastic straw in it. And if you're drinking hot drinks, you're probably having some plastic leaching. And so it's like, we've got to do better. I mean, there's got to be better out there. And that's really where kind of like I started with was doing all of the testing. And then I found that. And then I started talking to manufacturers and I was like, can I test your products? Because I really just wanted to build a product line for my own house and my kids that was free of all of this stuff. And some of them were like, yeah, sure. Order samples. You can send them to a lab and let us know like too, what you get back. And so I started doing that. And then friends started asking, like when I was talking to them about it, like, wait, can I get that? Can I get that? And I thought, okay.
Can we get that?
Yeah. You know, maybe I should start a brand. So that's something I'm working on now, actually, is launching a brand that is sustainably sourced, ethically sourced, compostable materials, PFA free, and tested on an EPA grade lab to ensure that there's not these sorts of toxins in a home line of products.
Oh my gosh. So that's, put us on the wait list. I want to be at the very top. I need all of this. Yeah. I haven't really done the deep dive into the kitchen stuff, but I've been trying to source better clothing material. And it's just so hard. All the yoga pants have plastic in them. It's very hard to find cotton, or if you do, it's blended with something else. It's just our clothing. And then you think about all the tight, I wear tight stuff. Like, look, I have a bodysuit on. I'm just breathing it in all day long. So happy to at least start with the household kitchen stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if it I think if it's touching our mouths or it's something we're eating off of, that should be regulated. And in like Ireland, they actually have like regulatory boards for these sorts of things for housewares, where it's like you can't have these things. And when there's emerging science coming out, then they're banning it from production, and they're creating manufacturing processes and regulations that fit to whatever the current and most recent science is on what's healthy and not. We were just, I think, a bit delayed here. And there's not transparency in regards to what products utilize for, you know, manufacturing. So I think that's the next, sort of the next thing we need to go through. Because I know the EPA is creating a task force because they're seeing so much of these PFAs in the ground soil. And even like what the firemen spray to stop a fire is essentially full of these sorts of chemicals. Then it gets into the soil, it gets into the drinking water. And the EPA now has to make sure that that gets out of the drinking water for human consumption, right? Which is another reason to have a home filtration system for your water. And I mean, the Washington Post just came out with an article talking about how PFAs and microplastics are now being found in breast milk. So it's not just stopping with us. It's continuing on to the next generation without us having this ability to keep this sort of out of our systems. And it wreaks havoc on the fertility of humans, and is going to be a bigger issue if we don't start doing something. So
For sure.
I want to know exactly how it's harming fertility, but I'm curious first, what do you see in, if you've cross-referenced with EWG and their reportings of what's standardized or clean, do you find what you've sent to the lab aligns with EWG reports?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about EWG. I've pulled a lot from Europe. And is that from Europe? Is that you're talking? Yeah, I don't remember the acronym, but I was thinking about a lot of
American.
Yeah, okay. It's a US-based environmental.
I'll have to look and compare there. I know this was about a year ago when I was doing a lot of this research, and I was comparing what I found in regulations to the US to what I was finding in Europe, and specifically found Ireland was more stringent on certain things. It was also about high borosilicated glass, like using soda lime glass, which is natural, versus a high like borosilicated glass, which contains certain chemicals that allow the glass to like shrink and release, which protects it from breakage more easily, but also is being considered potentially hazardous as well. And that's almost all of the glassware here in the US is like that too. So I kind of get really deep into the weeds on what is going into all of these products and who is caring about this. But I will have to look into EWG and get my head back into that, because I think it was maybe, 8 or so months ago that I was deep diving.
Okay. What are the chances that my porcelain coffee mug has plastic around it as I sip out of it?
Is there
what's print? My fate?
Is there print on it?
No, there's no print, but it is kind of glossy a little bit.
Yeah, possibly. I haven't really looked into porcelain, but I think that's an interesting one too. Also, China, I think it'd be interesting to look at that, because that's more, I think porcelain probably safer than glass or any of these coated water bottles out there.
Yeah. So even the glass water bottles are a risk factor.
I mean, that's according to standards that I was reading coming out in Europe, that there were, you know, active meetings happening and discussions happening as of last summer about what is in the glass too. Because there are, I mean, what is it? Pyrex went through their change because they were using some material that would allow like better adaptability between temperatures. But in order for glass to do that, there's other things added to it that make that, you know, a possibility without it shattering. So some of these protective things, I mean, we love plastic because it is so versatile. It has, you know, it's plastic. Like we say, neuroplasticity means we can have change within our brain. There's more flexibility with the brain. It's also true about the actual material plastic. Like there's more flexibility and usability and durability because it doesn't break down. But then there's a downside to that. And I think that's what we're all starting to look into in these different organizations, you know, within different governments are starting to start, you know, look into. And it's all very new. So I think more and more will come out, because it was BPA. We were like, BPA, no BPA. But now it's like, but what about PFAs? Like that's a lot larger. And BPA is one specific thing, whereas PFAs covers a whole host of different types of compounds. So and they're ever evolving. So adding mm-hmm. to the list is going to be inevitably continuous. So
yeah,
it's scary.
And there's a reason they call them forever chemicals, because they're hard to get rid of.
Yeah, they don't break down.
Yeah. Wait, just real quick, circling back to the Pyrex. So did they fix that? Is Pyrex okay now?
I think they got rid of it and switched to soda lime in the U.S., actually, because okay. I remember my mom complaining, too. And she's like, when I was telling her about this last year, she's like, oh, yeah, when Pyrex changed their formulas and now they shatter and, you know, and that's because I think they got rid of some of those chemicals that are in there, or not chemicals, but compounds that allow that flexibility, which okay. does make them less durable, but does make them more healthy. Right. So,
yeah, because actually
you have to compromise, you know, and I think people choosing what yeah. they'd like to self-select is fine, but also visibility into what is being put into them so that you can self-select which direction you want to go is important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our mom had actually told me like years ago, and I didn't really understand why. She said, when you take the Pyrex out of the fridge, let it get to a little bit of a room temperature before you throw it in like a 400 degree oven, because it will shatter. And I never really thought more about like, oh, why is that? But that makes so much sense. But anyways, okay. So Pyrex is maybe okay
Thanks,
now.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
So circling back to like the fertility connection, I think this is really interesting. There's a test, I don't know if you're familiar with it, Clockwise, created by Dr. Catherine Zagoni. Lauren and I did this test about a year ago, and I thought it was really interesting that I came up pretty high with like phthalates, parabens, like a lot of these toxins. And I'm like, oh my, but I live like a toxic-free lifestyle, so I thought. So it's really interesting to hear like some of these hidden things that you're talking about, and I'm going to do some more research on this. But anyways, I think that test is really interesting if someone wants to see what's going on in your body. But they do that because of the connection to fertility. So maybe you can share a little bit more, like what kind of research are you seeing with that? Because there's obviously a huge decline happening.
They've been doing studies on both long chain and short chain PFAS or PFAs. And they find that they like basically disrupt normal reproductive function in women by altering hormone secretion and fertility, and reducing sperm count in men. The study I can send you guys over, I read it, was in European News, but was essentially found that higher levels of PFAS in blood of would-be mothers were associated with up to 40% lower chances of pregnancy and conception. So that's really, there's several studies now on it. It's kind of becoming like really well researched, which is why I think like the EPA is starting to take action in regards to groundwaters. That's a current thing that's been taking place, is they're trying to find, they have a task force that's getting together and coming up with ideas like, how do we eradicate PFAs or PFAS from our ground soil? And that's not really an answered question yet. It's just a question mark, knowing that this is harmful. There's enough research behind it showing it's harmful. So what do we do about it, and how do we get rid of it? So I can send you some studies, but it's altering that. And then for men, it's altering sperm count. Like, I think the biggest thing for me that was like, fertility in men or sperm count in men in 2050. I Googled that, and someone said, Google this. And I Googled that, and it said zero. Like, and I was like, this is crazy. This can't be true. But there were some books that came out. There was a ton of research in the books that were talking about how sperm count has dropped once the introduction of plastics happened in the 80s, from the 70s to now. And the decline is showing such a consistent decline that for these particular writers of the book that were doctors, they were saying that sperm count will drop to zero. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I just know if you Google it, you're going to see some things. And to me, it's just an eye-opener.
Possible. Yeah. And actually, I will say for men, Google it.
Google it.
For men, I think as biohackers, for the men out there, I think testing your sperm is actually a really great test to see what's going on, whether you're trying to get pregnant or not. It's kind of like a sign of vitality. And I know I can't think of the name of the company, but you can just order a test online. They'll send it to your house. You can check. It sounds weird, but you can just check your sperm at home, send it off to the lab, and they'll give you count, motility, morphology, and it can be really good insight as to what's going on in the body.
Yeah.
And I'll link to that in the show notes, but
yeah, testosterone too is being shown to like be decreasing at a rapid rate, and estrogen in men is increasing, and we have testosterone dominance in women, and we have like all of these hormone imbalances that weren't a thing, you know, 40 years ago. And this is what they're claiming is the reason. Did you Google it, Lauren?
I pulled it up so I wouldn't forget, but I didn't open it because it's going to be a deep dive here.
Yeah.
But basically, I'm just kind of loosely seeing that it's cut in half over the last 40 years. It's going to continue dropping. Yeah, it's going to be basically non-existent by 2050, like you said.
Right. And so I think that's why our government agencies are starting to take it really seriously. I just think that now we need to hold manufacturers and product developers accountable to kind of adapt to this so that we can do what we can to protect human health and our fertility and our reproductive systems and our hormone cycles, which has downstream impact on our metabolic health and everything else. So
longevity. So yeah. Where do people start? Like, do you maybe have like a top five things you should do to clean up your environment or something?
Yes. Number one, dump your plastics. Those Tupperwares, I know it's easy, but the Ziploc bags, go to Sprouts or something and get the beeswax coated paper bags, or utilize jars. I've got our kids using metal bento boxes for their lunches instead of the convenient plastic, you know, snap and goes. There's a lot of development with stainless steel you can utilize in lieu of plastics. So that would be the first one, is dump your plastics. The second would be to filter your water at home. And to not be drinking out of plastic water bottles, because yes, it's filtered, but now you're getting a different type of plastic in your system. So filter your home water system. And I would say number three is to essentially start looking. It's hard. It's hard to find products that are not using plastics in their materials, because this is all very newly emerged evidence and scientific information. So I think that when that happens, there has to be visibility and sort of adoption in regards to regulation first before companies start to adapt their processes. And that hasn't happened yet. So it's going to be very hard to find natural products that are honest. I know, you know, like women's period panties or menstrual underwear, everyone kind of adopted Thinks for a while and then found like there's a bunch of plastics in Thinks. And now there's women switching to bamboo, you know, options. I really love Salt Co. As a period panty brand, because they're plastic free. Haven't sent them into the lab.
Oh, not familiar.
Okay. Haven't sent them into the lab, but Salt Co. is a good one. Yeah, but get it away from, you know, your private areas that are the most susceptible, and start looking and start writing companies. Like, that helps too. I know it sounds like a lot of work, but if they know that it matters, then they will start figuring out how to adapt to what consumers are demanding. So those would be my top three.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. And when can we expect your company to be available? I need it yesterday, because I'll just tell you some context. I'm traveling right now and I've been in hotels, and water has been my biggest source of frustration right now. Like, getting water to my hotel room, because even if I go to Whole Foods, like, the spring water is always in plastic bottles. Like, anywhere I try to source it, and people are like, just carry a water bottle and fill it up. And I'm like, I'm filling it up from a plastic water dispenser. Like, and there's no way around it unless I travel with a filtration system, which is kind of difficult to do because I have limited baggage. I'm flying.
It's really absolutely tricky. I'd love it if a company like Grail, which I don't know if you've seen those, but they're like a water bottle for hikers that you scoop and then you put this in, and the straw is a filtration system. I would love it if they switched from using plastic in their manufacturing to using stainless steel. That would be amazing. Maybe in silicone.
Write them today. Yeah, what's the name of the company?
Grail.
Like, I have one of those, and like, I don't know why I've been afraid to use it. Like,
the concept is a little creepy. It's just like, I just got this out of a lake. Let's drink it. You know, you're like,
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to find delicious out.
Parasite water.
Yeah, exactly. But that's an interesting experiment that could be done, is like parasite testing after using a Grail for a set period of time on natural, you know, groundwaters and things. Hotels are hard. Traveling is hard because you're going to get what's in your hotel room? Yeah, there's water. It's in plastic. And when you go out, it's mostly plastic. I mean, occasionally you can find something like this. But as we know, even with aluminum cans, they're lined with a BPA-free plastic liner on the inside. Like, that is how they keep the steel from the aluminum from getting rusted. So it's really,
but a lesser evil potentially.
Yeah, it's a lesser evil for sure, for sure. But yeah, travel, I would say, is the hardest thing. And I honestly haven't fully figured that out. I do like Mountain Spring that come in the green glass bottles. Mountain Valley, that's it. That's a good one. Topo Chico is great because they come in glass again. We don't do a very good job here in the US about recycling glass. Our systems aren't set up to be able to recycle glass easily, even if you're a really good recycler yourself. So I'd say that's an area we should systemically work to improve on.
I'm so torn because I try to buy the Mountain Valley, but then I'm like, oh gosh, the glass is just going to a glass landfill. And I'm like, oh, it feels irresponsible, but like I'm choosing myself first and then it keeps me up at night.
Hard to win. It's really hard to win. We need systemic change in order to support the changes that we're making in our lifestyle. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking to launch by sometime in June. And the brand is called Earth and Aesthetic because really the point of the brand for me was like, this is meant to be sustainable for the earth without compromising on aesthetic. You can make beautiful things that are also healthy and safe. And that's really just kind of my own thoughts of encompassing like how beautiful sustaining nature is, as well as making products that look beautiful and help our bodies. So
that's awesome.
I'm so excited for this. So, so excited. So when that happens, let us know and we'll push that out to our audience. But we're so grateful to talk to you today. I mean, we originally connected around blood sugar and mental health and with the Good Idea drinks, which is the blood sugar support. And it's just so amazing to hear about your biohacking journey. And thank you for sharing all of this with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast with the babes, I will say.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was so fun. I learned a lot and I feel like I have some homework, but I really, really appreciate all that.
I have more tabs open. You just gave me like a little homework to do for sure.
Yeah.
Where can our audience find more of you?
Yeah. You can write me at hello@erinknight.com or you can visit me on Instagram at @erinknight. And then eventually we will be, you know, probably in the next week or so, getting a preliminary website up. That would be earthandaesthetic.com if you'd like to sign up for sort of preview of the product and things like that too.
Beautiful. Great.
Thank you.
We will link to that in the show notes for everybody. And Erin, any final piece of advice you'd like to leave our audience today? Maybe something they should start doing right away to optimize their health.
Yeah, I think the first thing is if you are going through any issues, whether it's mental health, fertility, or otherwise, don't blame your body. First, look to your environment. Trust your body. It's a machine that's ready to heal. It's there and it's ready to support you. It's not a matter of you doing things wrong. It's a matter of the environment that we're in these days and how much exposure we have to all sorts of environmental and stress and you know, food toxicity and all of these different things. So give yourself some grace. This is my first advice. Second is we have the ability to drive health changes utilizing data. So if you need help on any of that, reach out. I'm sure the babes have so many tips for you. I'm here. But a CGM or a testing of, you know, hormones, things like that, so that you can start to pull the picture together or get coaches who can support that, like the biohacking babes who are here to help. Just because navigating it on your own is a lot. I'm thankful and very blessed that I had a lot of people around me who were already really well into this space when I first started going on this journey. So I had a lot of help and I didn't do it on my own. So trust yourself and lean into community and get support where you need it.
I love that.
We love that. And thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Teamwork. Can't do it alone.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, yes, this was so much fun.
We did
thanks, it. Erin.
Yay. Yeah.
You guys.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks to everyone that tuned in today. We will see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional.